Tonight as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of IRN. It's advert.
Good evening, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring it. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guest, and, well, our guest this evening is Charles Kupis and Chuck Kupis, and we're going to be talking about his book, America's Financial Reckoning Day. And I really believe that the reckoning day is coming very, very soon. Certainly we have a massive monetary system built upon fiat money, and as Voltaire had said so well, eventually fiat money returns to its actual value, and that is nothing. The whole world is on fiat money. They're running, of course, a deficit. Now we're running M3, currency production, about 12 to 13% here in the United States, and in some places 17, 20% over in China. And of course, this eventually results in inflation, destroys the value of all currencies, and certainly, as Daniel Webster had said so well, this is the ultimate means of cheating the working man, and eventually the whole system collapses. But he doesn't understand until it's too late, and everything he's worked for all of his life, he thinks give him security, has simply become a remembrance of things past. Well, Chuck, thank you so very much for being with us again tonight.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's good to be with you again.
Well, now, what prompted you to write your book, America's Financial Reckoning Day?
Well, as you know, I've been studying the financial issues for some time, but there's a growing concern among a lot of Americans, your listeners included, about our fiscal liabilities and issues like that, twin deficits, and we can't shrug these off. We're the only country in the world that's dared to run up these kind of debts. They're almost incomprehensible. In fact, I just learned that the global credit derivatives now is approaching $415 trillion. That is, again, these are figures that are way beyond what we can understand.
Well, of course, Buffett, Warren Buffett, had said, you know, derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal. And he's warning people just never get into them. He plays this game because he can lose $1 billion or two and not be too concerned. But if I were to lose $1 billion, I'd be in real trouble.
Well, yeah. Well, there could be accidents out there, and of course, things are geopolitical issues, macroeconomic issues are looming, and of course, it's hard to explain these to people sometimes, so it causes one to write a book, but a lot of people don't even think it can happen, or anything could happen to America. So I wanted to put things in perspective, and of course, the other reason, more importantly, I guess, is that these imbalances, economic distortions, there's a lot of good books that are written in this area. But I've chosen to bring a Christian worldview to bear on these topics concerning the Middle East, Israel, Arab nations, oil, China, Russia, and America's monetary decline. And, of course, we're hearing about that in the news just today with the things that are going off on over in the Gaza Strip and so on. And a final reason, of course, was just to give some sensible investment ideas, hedging strategies. I've been in the consulting business, financial, for almost 20 years. So that's some of my perspectives to give people. And that's
now for the first time we're beginning to find countries throughout the world, Kuwait, Iran, Venezuela, Syria, all beginning to cut their peg to the dollar, their currency, they're divorcing it from the dollar. And when enough of that happens, the dollar ceases to be the reserve currency. And all those the hundreds of billions of dollars out there come flooding home.
Right.
Well, Chuck, what should be our biggest concern as a nation from a financial point of view?
Well, exactly just what you said there, and that is the future of the dollar. U.S. dollar is the world's reserve currency, and that this is an issue that determines our fiscal and foreign policies, our the strength of our markets, military deployments, and other alliances around the world. So it's a huge question. As Richard Russell had said, it's the single biggest question facing us today, and most people don't even know enough to ask that question. So it is a major theme in my book, and of course, one of the best ways to understand it, this situation, how we've become a reserve currency, was going to the post-war period of 1944 and the Bretton Woods Agreement, which set up the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. The currencies could peg their currencies to the U.S. dollar, and the dollar was backed with gold. And this was a very good thing as long as we had gold backing the dollar. Well, that changed abruptly. As you know, in 1971, when we defaulted or decoupled the gold standard to the dollars, foreign dollars for redemption, and this basically put us on a floating currency. Fiat currencies are all currencies in the world are fiat currencies now, and unfortunately, they can go to zero, as you said earlier. And one of the interesting developments in the post-war period was the U.S. dollar being set up as a new standard, not backed with, shall we say, gold, but backed up with oil, as known as the petrodollar recycling system. And I only want to cover this real quick because I've done it before, but it's basically in the embargo in the Middle East in 1973 in October, oil prices went up 400%, and there were lines everywhere, and people remember this. And it was decided at that time through secret shuttle diplomacy with Henry Kissinger to get the Saudi Arabian officials to sit down in New York, and they created something called the Arabian Joint Commission on Economic Cooperation. Now, this was sponsored by the Federal Reserve and the Treasury and so on. The whole issue here was to set up petrodollar recycling. In other words, huge currency reserves were held offshore in U.S. dollars. Our trade deficits had seen to this, and we wanted to recycle those dollars back into our own markets, and this has been basically what has been set up since 1974. It's a petrodollar exchange system. The oil exporting countries get U.S. dollars for payment for oil, invoice their trade, and then export those petrodollars back into the U.S. market. And this is what's been going on since. Just in last year alone, oil profits was $1.5 trillion. So you can see that this is kind of a big subject.
Chuck, be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chuck Coopers is talking a little bit about the petrodollars. First of all, of course, the countries of the world were on a gold standard, and then after the Second World War, all the countries of the world pegged their currencies to the American dollar because America had most of the gold, and all the currencies of the world then could be redeemed. If they had dollars, they could redeem them in gold, and so what was by that means, after the Second World War, we'd accumulated the gold, then we could redistribute the gold, and that worked pretty well until we began to run short of gold, and then, of course, we wouldn't have any gold behind our currency. They kept telling people gold was of no consequence, but, of course, the international financiers don't believe that. That's why they've kept gold all these years. And so it was then on August 15th, 1971, I can remember it very well during the Vietnam War. We were off camping with my son and one of his friends off in the wilds of Canada and hearing on the radio that they had temporarily suspended the redeemability of the dollar. Now, that was just temporary. Richard Nixon said, it's only temporary. We'll temporarily stop redeeming our currency with gold. But then, of course, when this run on the dollar is over, then we get back to redeeming the dollar. Well, he didn't say how long that temporary the interruption was going to be. That was, about 38 years ago. And, of course, it persisted 36 years ago. So ever after that, then we had, of course, the fiat currencies. And then Chuck was basically talking about the petrodollars. And these were the massive currency reserves accumulated by the oil-developing countries, Saudi Arabia and their fellow oil producers. They would accumulate massive amounts of dollars, but then they would send them back to the United States and invest them here in bonds and other things. And then we would have all this currency that we could lend out to other countries through the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and through the Agency for International Development and the Asian Development Bank. And then we could get all of these other countries in the world indebted to the United States as we began really, in many respects, to build an empire. And we did it with all of this money that had been artificially created that had nothing behind it at this time, other than, of course, the pledge and the integrity of America's leaders. So pick the story up, Chuck.
Well, that's a good explanation. I think it's out, mainly the petrodollar recycling, was out to protect the operations of the Federal Reserve in New York City as a central bank. So it's out to protect the system as it is. And the true beneficiaries in this was the New York and London financial districts, the New York Mercantile Exchange and the International Petroleum Exchange. So they both were securing that U.S. dollars on those markets had to be traded in dollars for oil. And so that was how that was established. And, of course, the people behind that and the owners of the exchanges is J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and BP Amoco and others. So the oil bourses that exist in the world today, there's three of them. They're called oil markers in the trade. And they're the North Sea Brent crude, and then, of course, West Texas. And these three are all, you know, cycling U.S. dollars. And we have a threat looming in which Iraq, as you know, in 2000 tried to switch to euros. In fact, they did effectively switch to euros for oil. And this prompted our administration to move into that area. And, of course, I believe that's a big reason why we're in Iraq. And, of course, Iran is now threatening the very same thing. In fact, they're going further. They want to open up an oil bourse. That is an actual, commodity exchange for the euro, strictly a petro-euro system. So it's a big subject. There's more to this. I have a couple videos on my website at chuckcoppes.com, that's C-O-P-P-E-S, and they can actually look at those videos, learn a little bit more about that. But looking at the alliances that have been created with Iran is clearly aligned with China and Russia, in which developed is a NATO of the Far East, and that's the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO. And it's a commodity cartel. It's Eastern, Central Asian countries, China and Russia and Iran, and this is presenting a scenario that could lead to economic and potentially even military warfare, again, over the issue of oil. Oil is that geostrategic that it's affecting the alignment of the nations. And I think we're potentially, if there ever is a successful petro-euro recycling, and not the U.S. dollar, and this is the direction it's going. Europe would like to see this, as a matter of fact. Then that would be the end of the U.S. dollar in capital markets on world trade as a reserve currency, and this is a major threat as we see looming. It's a theme within my book.
Well, what would happen, though, if these dollars ceased to be the reserve currency of the world? What would happen to its value?
Well, historically, we've seen what happens in hyperinflation, and that is when currency comes back to the host country. 70% of our currency is offshore, U.S. dollars. That's the broad money supply. And these are countries that have to hold huge reserves of dollars in order to exchange in international markets. It could very easily lead to a hyperinflationary depression, a scenario similar to what happened in Germany in the 20s. Argentina and other examples exist today. And this is the kind of crisis that I think our elitists and administrators are see occurring potentially on the horizon. An economic crisis could occur through one of our ideological enemies. This would be Red China, which has a huge block of currency, and we know the Arab countries as well. And I think this is really moving into place the North American community, the initiative for a North American Union, the very strategy in which to create a North American Union for as a trading bloc and forcing a new currency, which you're aware is the Amero currency. A lot of people are not even sure that, a lot of people perhaps haven't even heard about the North American Union. We're beginning to hear more. But they've already proposed an Amero currency, complete merging of our political systems, economic systems, with Mexico and Canada. NAFTA perimeter, as they put it, with biometric passport and, of course, a super corridor highway, which is already under construction. These elitists believe that we have to compete with the European Union as a trading bloc. And this is presenting a challenge to them right now. And I'd like to talk this evening a little bit about the European Union and how it fits into the scenario here.
All right, fine. Well, you go right ahead.
What I think we're seeing develop here is, and I developed this in my book, part three of my book deals with political paradigms and prophetic implications. That's a global realignment of world power. It was in 1946, in a famous speech in Zurich, that Churchill called to the United States of Europe. And there's been a book recently by T.R. Reid called The United States of Europe, The New Superpower and the End of American Supremacy. And he makes a pretty strong case for the European Union rising as an economic power and the end of U.S. dollar hegemony. In other words, a forceful move, not an orderly transition, as some are hoping, of a new world reserve currency, but the euro becoming the new reserve currency. I believe this is what we're seeing develop, and I think that's where things are heading. It was since 1948, the European movement has grown now in power and prestige, and they have a trading bloc of currently 27 nations. And the EU consists basically of five institutions, unlike three here in the U.S., the executive and the legislative and judicial. They have the EU Commission, which is about 30,000 what they call eurocrats in Brussels. That's the headquarters. And then the Parliament is about 800 members. So far to the left, in fact, Mikhail Gorbachev called it the European Soviet. And then there's the Court of Justice, the Council of Ministers, and the European Council, and that was formed in 1987. We'll talk about that in a minute. The EU is now has a larger GDP than the United States, somewhere like $14 trillion compared to $13 trillion. The euro bonds now exceed the market cap for U.S. bonds worldwide, almost $5 trillion. 12% of the population there has 40% of the wealth. 50% of world trade, 26% of foreign direct investment, more than the U.S. They have 40 of the largest 100 banks, 32 largest corporations, 30% of major brands, and the Airbus company has now exceeded Boeing in production, at least they did last year. In 1998, the European Central Bank was established in Frankfurt, Germany, and it's now poised, I believe, to replace the Federal Reserve System as the most influential central bank in the world. Europe doesn't have the ability to export its inflation, to run up deficits, to force the world to use euros and so on. By sheer volume, 50 nations use the euro now for transactions, but the central bank volume is approaching 30%. The U.S. is about 64%. So by sheer volume, they're challenging the dollar just in a short space. Since 2002, when the euro was officially launched with 12 members in the eurozone, and in that same year, 2002, we know that they held a convention on the future of Europe, which is now under debate right now. In fact, they're going to have a meeting next week on this same topic, trying to draft and adopt the EU Constitution, or Basic Treaty as they've now called it. And I'd like to talk with you a little bit more about what that's all about.
All right, we'll do that as soon as we get back. But I think what's so important is for our listeners to know that one of the major driving forces towards the centralization of power with the European Union has always been America. Our elitists here have done everything they could to build up this competitor, which I think in the very near future is going to eclipse the United States. Their currency will eclipse ours, and when our reserve currency, all those worthless dollars come home, our currency here will become worthless as well. Well, Chuck, go right ahead, pick the story up there.
Well, there's quite a bit that I've covered or documented in the book as well, but it was Rockefeller Foundations, Ford, Carnegie, and others are central.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
The Mr. Ashley Moses, a member of that parliament, when they have a debate, he has 1 minute to speak. They have absolutely no power. They are simply a rubber stamp for a massive bureaucracy of bureaucrats who have been appointed by nobody knows who. Now they're trying to put a president in. He will not be answerable to the people of Europe, but to a special counsel that's going to appoint him. So you pick the story up there.
Yes, this idea of a president on the world stage is something that they've been driving for some time. It looks like it's going to be illegally in place by the middle of 2009, by the next referendum. And many evangelical scholars believe that the EU is a fulfillment of Bible prophecy, in other words, a revived Roman Empire.
And here's our good friend, Constance Cumby has been watching the man who has been leading this European system. And, of course, his name is Javier Solanum, and he was actually appointed, at least in the past, on two occasions by different bills, each one with a number 666.
Yeah.
So it may be just coincidence, maybe just by chance, maybe one chance in 20 trillion, but certainly it occurred. 666 on both occasions. These were the various bills that got him appointed. And now he is, of course, in charge of the Western European Union and the Western European Union military. We'll see what happens as the story evolves. But go ahead there, Chuck.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I've looked at Constance Cumby's website and Xavier Solon. I think, I don't know how you pronounce it.
Javier.
Is that it? Okay. And, he's pretty prominent. In fact, he could probably fill the position of the foreign minister. That's already pretty much what he's doing, although that there is a movement to block him from being the new foreign minister, so I don't know. Well, Christians believe that the EU is, I've been watching it for several years, maybe 25 years, and it's been fascinating to see it develop and change its name and now a treaty and so on. But a world leader is expected to rise up from this political union. And, of course, he will lead this new superpower. And this is what we see geopolitically rising on the scene. The EU is now expected to have a combined army of 2.2 million under the European Defense Agency. They have a program called Headline Goal 2010, in which they'd like to have this organized. They don't have a combined military yet, but they would be second only to China in terms of military strength. So it's there to project. And it's only a matter of time. I was doing some research today online before they unite politically and monetarily and, of course, militarily. All of this occurring. And right now, China, the EU is China's largest trading partner, not the U.S. A lot of people are not aware of that. And they have more export partners than the U.S. But both Europe is very dependent on oil and, of course, very aligned, shall we say, with OPEC and the use of the euro. That would be a benefit to them. They're also very partial to the Palestinians and a two-state cause and that sort of thing. But the politics of oil is going to be grow to be a larger issue as China is now emerging. In fact, they started importing oil in 1993. We started importing in 1969 here in the U.S. But they're consuming, China's consuming 60% of all the concrete for dams and construction right now.
All the concrete in the world, the world is producing.
Yeah. Scrap iron, 90% of all the scrap iron is being used up. Copper, lead, commodities, lumber. They've laid 20,000 miles of road recently, and they expect another 30,000 more by 2008.
But, you know, Chris, Chuck, this is all being financed by the United States, by the International Monetary Fund,
right,
by the World Bank, by the East Asia Development Bank, by the Export-Import Bank, by American corporations, by American banks. We, and certainly our European allies, are funding this tremendous explosive growth in China today. And people say, how are they able to accomplish what they have? Very simply, we are building up the best enemy money can buy in China, in Russia, and, of course, growing antagonism towards America, I think, is very soon going to plunge the world into a world holocaust. But go right ahead with your thoughts.
Well, okay. And China's a fascinating story. I have a piece in my book on that issue, and it's just how they've risen to power since 1978. And so they're not only laying the roads, someone has to ask, they're expected to be one of the largest auto markets by 2015, beating Germany, U.S., Germany, and Japan. Where are they going to get the oil for all these automobiles? That's the question I'm asking. So we can expect an oil to be a huge issue.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I guess it's Chuck Kupis. And go ahead, Chuck.
Well, China is expected to be perhaps head up the Association of Southwest Asian Nations. That's called ASEAN. It's a free trade area with several Far East countries. And so they're representing another, shall we say, a trading bloc in the Far East. So you have the European Union. You have the North American Union. And I'm not sure in our financial collapse how well we're going to recover or assert ourselves. Certainly someone put it well when they said our military empire would crumble if the U.S. dollar imperialism or the collapses as well. That's what underwrites America being an empire. And this is very strategic.
And I think people have to understand that we spend more money on our military than all the rest of the countries in the world together. We have more people in our prisons. We have 7 million Americans in prison, in probation, or parole today. Nobody's ever going to tell you that. Supposedly we're a free country. We have our troops in 130 nations at 720 overseas bases. Why do we have this? Because we have an empire, and nobody's told the American people. And the whole theme of this has been for America to lead the world into this one world government. But, and I think Chuck is absolutely right, if our currency begins to crumble, if other countries were to begin, of course, to lose faith in the American dollar, and we would suddenly, our economy would begin to collapse, and suddenly we would cease to be the leading country in the world. We might have nuclear weapons, but of course we wouldn't be able to finance them. So many of the things we do throughout the world, and would have to begin actually pulling our troops back home. You've got to be able to pay your troops, and what happens when you don't have the money? What happens if we were to have a major depression and the tax base were to begin to contract? So you pick this story up there, Chuck, because there's all sorts of potential scenarios that could be playing out in the very near future. And we're not talking about a distant time. We're talking about the fact that there are many people who believe that we'll be at war with Iran and the rest of the Muslim world before this year is out.
Absolutely. In fact, well, let's face it, oil or militaries are projected to protect oil. China's certainly moving in this direction. Our Pentagon officials are way up on that, watching that with concern. U.S. dollar imperialism goes, that's when the American empire goes with it. That's all there is to it. And this is looming on the horizon. At the same time, we have a geophysical problem with peak oil debate. And
hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Okay, Chuck, go right ahead.
There's a book been written by Daniel Yergin. It's 900 pages long. I sorted through it, but it's called The Prize, The Epic Quest for Oil, Money, and Power. And it really just shows the history, national struggles for oil, World War II, and before and beyond, now China. And the industrial nations right now, the OECD nations, use about 57% of the oil, crude oil. That's about a billion people, maybe. 43% is left over for the entire world. Everybody else can fight over that. And now we're facing what there was a geophysicist at Shell, Marion K. Hubert, who proposed the Hubert Curve, as it's now known, predicting U.S. crude oil would start peaking in 1970. And, of course, this is exactly what did happen. Easy oil became that. The days of easy oil were over, shall we say. And just today, in fact, there was a report. This is a debatable issue. Listen, look at this. British Petroleum has a statistical review of world energy published to show that the world has enough proven reserves to provide for 40 years of consumption at current rates. The same article says, however, scientists led by the London-based Oil Depletion Analysis Center say the global production of oil is set to peak in the next 4 years. Spokesman there said that the peak will come as soon as 2011. And this is what the Association for the Study of Peak Oil and Gas has confirmed as well, that 2010 is when we're going to face what they call a bell-shaped curve. I don't pretend to know everything on this, but I see more books that are convincing that the peak oil theory is going to play out. And we're not talking, like you said, a lot of years down the road. I think it's wishful thinking, but there's even Matt Simmons wrote the book Twilight in the Desert about the Saudi oil fields, which he's explored some of them, that they will peak in 2015.
Well, of course, I would tend to disagree with all of them. If you have a chance, go up on my webpage and read my two articles on peak oil. But it really doesn't matter. As long as we have an environmental movement here that can block development of our offshore oil, can block a drilling up in the Arctic Wildlife Reserve, can block development of the massive oil fields off of the North Slope. It doesn't matter. We could have enough oil for about 200 years, which I really believe we have, but if you can't develop it, why it doesn't get pretty good? So it doesn't really matter whether I'm right or whether they're right. The important thing is that they've shut off oil development here in the United States in an intentional effort to make the United States, which I happen to believe has great oil wealth. In fact, we have enough oil in the oil shale in Colorado and the adjacent states to last us a couple hundred years, but we're not going to develop it because there are people who wish to impoverish this nation. So the debate is moot because, of course, we're not going to be able to protect America. There are people who have a different agenda. But if you do have a chance, I'd suggest look at my website, my two articles on peak oil, because the truth thing is the books are telling you the truth. You wouldn't be able to buy them at your local bookstore.
Right.
And so go right ahead, though.
Well, you raised a good point there, because in 1974, Robert Anderson headed up ARCO, and he funded, through the Ford Foundation, the creation of the Aspen Institute, Friends of the Earth, all these other environmental groups. They just found these people, organizations to fund and to promote and to discourage alternative fuels, particularly the nuclear industry, because they're trying to corner the market, the oil market. We're talking the seven oil sisters and, of course, the Anglo-American complex that controls crude oil and so on. So we have a big argument about the peak oil issue, and it's looming in such a way. Countries that are importing now that used to export, China and the U.S. and so on, this is going to, either way you look at it, it's going to create a geopolitical tension for the search for oil. And of course, Saudi Arabia is caught in sort of in the middle of this. They've been nearly a client state since 1938. That was when they first discovered oil 4,000 feet down at Dam and Well Number 7. They broke most of the oil fields in Saudi Arabia are 150 times more powerful, I guess, than those in the U.S. So this is what really put Saudi Arabia on the map. And, of course, it was the Rockefeller companies' orbit, shall we say, that really built them up, ExxonMobil, Chevron, and ARCO and others. So they've, in 1948, they formed the American Oil Company with concessions to Chevron, Texaco, Exxon, and Mobil. And they created Aramco. Well, Saudi Aramco was completely bought by the Sauds, Saudi Arabian family, in 1980. So it's a wholly owned operation now. And the Saud clan basically started, 250 years ago, now numbers something like 30,000 members in the Saud royal family, out of 20 million Saudi Arabians living there. And most of them are Sunni, Wahhabi fundamentalists, Sharia law, very strict state, and they see the Saud royal family being corrupted by the West, by petrodollar recycling, this whole arrangement. The Carlyle Group is a New York private equity group that handles a lot of the money for the Saud family, and we know how well connected they are with the establishment. John Bradley's written a book here recently, The Saudi Arabia Exposed, Inside a Kingdom in Crisis, in which we're seeing attacks on Muslim leaders, just like today in the Gaza Strip with Hamas, which is part of the Muslim Brotherhood, which was founded in 1928. It's mostly Sunni Muslims, and they were banned in Egypt in 1954. They later killed Anwar Sadat in 1981. When they want to overthrow these apostate Muslim leaders or nations, whatever, they have a term for that called takfir, and then that means that they become a kafir or a non-believer. And so there's the justification for overthrowing or imposing an Islamic theocracy, and this is exactly what they want. Islamofascism is what it is. Osama bin Laden, who is a Sunni and Wahhabi, has vowed to overthrow Saudi King Abdullah, and of course we've seen attacks over there February of last year, and of course April of this year. This year they attacked five different fields. They had 170 people arrested, trying to disrupt the whole scenario in the Persian Gulf. So it's becoming pretty tense, as we can tell, and that's why we patrol. That's why we are in the Middle East, to protect the Saud royal family, the petrodollar exchange system. We have a huge embassy there, as people are now learning. Permanent presence there, the Iraqi Green Zone. It's 104 acres, 27 buildings, probably have about 1,000 people in there. That's a pretty big compound. In fact, that's the biggest embassy in the entire world.
Well, you know, I think it's really interesting as you begin looking at this thing from a geopolitical point of view, and certainly until very recently, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, the strip of nations out along the United Arab Emirates and Yemen, they were the largest. That was where the largest concentration of oil, that in Saudi Arabia, probably that in Iraq and Iran, were the areas where mostly oil was coming from. And certainly that was the oil that was being used in Europe and in Russia. I mean, we get most of our oil here from Mexico, from Canada, mm-hmm. from Venezuela, from Nigeria, so we're really not dependent upon what happens over there. But as far as the stability of Europe and the others, why they've needed that oil until the last couple of years, when the largest exporter of oil and natural gas in the world suddenly became the Soviet Union. Now,
right.
Nobody ever asks how that came about, and I will tell you, if you read my latest newsletter, it's all about a major American oil companies, the Export-Import Bank, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, Exxon, British Petroleum, Shell Oil Company, putting hundreds of billions of dollars of money into Russia to build that up as an alternative energy source, so that if we were suddenly tomorrow to wipe out all of the oil production in the Middle East, why, of course, Europe could survive and other countries could survive simply on Russia's output, massive output. And it's all come about because of America's investment there, planning to shift production from Saudi Arabia, of course, up to Russia, which doesn't make sense. Why would they have been planning this over a period of many years? And then suddenly we find out that Iran has announced that if we were to attack them, that they would launch an attack on all the oil facilities along the Persian Gulf and take them out, with their missiles. And suddenly all the oil that's now going to China and Japan and Europe would, of course, no longer be available, and would not be available for an indefinite period of time. Is there a lot of long-range planning on taking us into this war, but leaving alternatives as far as oil for Europe and for Asia? These are all uncertain questions, but what has happened to Russia is certainly one of the great miracles of all time, and nobody ever asks how it could be that a country where if you get an hour out of either Moscow or St. Petersburg, you're in the 19th century, and I was told that recently by a Russian dissident, could suddenly become the greatest oil producer of oil and natural gas in the world. How could that possibly happen? It didn't happen just by accident, but nobody is telling the American people that we're funding this whole thing, just like we're funding the amazing developments in China today, which is now planning on putting in 200 nuclear plants, and we're financing many of these, but we can't build them here in the United States for our own people.
Right.
Something's wrong with this scenario.
All right. Well, it's interesting. Russia, just last year, did edge out Saudi Arabia as the largest. They put out more barrels per day than Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has the largest company, but Russia puts out more production. And they have nearly a corner on the gas, natural gas, as well as Iran. But I don't know if we can trust Russia too much here, because they just nationalized Dutch Shell like Venezuela is doing with four companies down there, including Dutch and BP and so on. So they're consolidating some power, and of course their membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization with China and these rogue states like Venezuela and Indonesia and others, these are OPEC members. There's an alignment, there's a shift underway, and this is kind of what we're seeing. Now look at Iran, they're the fourth largest exporter in the world, and here they are made up predominantly Shiite Muslims, and the majority in Iraq is Shiites, and the only other enclave out there might be Bahrain. But the Shiites make up about 20% of all the Muslims, opposed to the Sunnis. They believe they have the right successor or caliph from the Prophet, and we've heard about this just today, that the Golden Mosque in Samarra, Iraq, was attacked yesterday morning. There's been some violence over there. This is the second time they've struck at the Golden Mosque, and it's merely a footnote in the news stories that, oh, by the way, this is where the 10th and 11th imams, successors from the Prophet, are buried, and this is where they expect the 12th imam, known as the al-Mahdi, to be emerging and leading the world in justice. In fact, it was Ahmadinejad, who was a devoted follower of this whole idea. He says the ultimate promise of all divine religions will be fulfilled with the emergence of the perfect human being, the al-Mahdi. Another cleric, Mufti Elias, says he will rule for 7 years. This is part of their eschatology. This is what they believe. In fact, just in January of this year, a gentleman named Samar Abu Kamur claimed to be the Mahdi, and he was immediately killed by the Shiites and the Sunni defenders over there. And so there's this expectation that if they can create enough apocalypse, this is what Ahmadinejad is believing, then they can create the emergence of this perfect human being.
And I think what you're really saying is they believe that they can precipitate a major war with the West, because what's going on there doesn't make any sense from a logical point of view.
Well,
why would Iran want to go to war with the United States, the most powerful nation in the world? But
well,
they believe that this could actually bring the Mahdi back and world peace.
Well, I think we're going after Iran. Let's face it, they're proposing a whole, not just to invoice in euros, but a whole exchange in euros to challenge U.S. dollar imperialism. Here is a threat directly at our, what William Clark calls our Achilles heel in his book Petrodollar Warfare. This is what the Bin Ladens and this is what these little dictators, they know. Venezuelan's president has said as much. So they know what they're trying to create, but this thing with the Middle East and the expectation of a leader coming as well, it fits into the eschatology of the times we're living in. And the majority of evangelicals believe that we're living in the last days. And some of the evidence of this is the popularity of the Left Behind series by Dr. Tim LaHaye, who has sold 80 million copies, nearly 12 books. It's a premise based on a clear distinction between the church and Israel, and that things are going to go finally come down to conflict in the Middle East, generally covering a seven-year period the Bible speaks of. Prior to these days, the Lord takes out translate believers, and millions are left behind to go into this period, similar to the way Noah was put in the ark, say. In this chaos, a world leader in Europe will rise up and bring peace in the Middle East. Conditions, of course, worsen until the Battle of Armageddon, and then Christ returns with the church, and he reigns for 1,000 years. You know, Israel, they say, is the super sign that we're living in the last days. I have a chart in my book that illustrates this, but that raises an important question about America's future. As much as it's America's financial reckoning day, most agree that we're living in a post-Christian or almost anti-Christian humanist society. And put simply, America's just not mentioned in Bible prophecy. and actually see America's monetary and political decline as a moral judgment against America. It was George Washington that said that religion and morality were indispensable supports to our republic. John Adams said that our Constitution was meant only for a moral and religious people. And the Bible says he makes the nations great, and then he destroys them in Job 12:23. You know, I love my country, but we're really on a slippery slope. In fact, today is Flag Day, and waving our flags. Listen, I love my country. I used to have a bumper sticker that said, I love my country, but I fear my government. And we're facing some serious economic challenges, and I'm not sure America's going to recover from our financial reckoning day. It's going to be a political paradigm, a juxtaposition, a sudden shift of power that we wouldn't expect naturally to see. America is the greatest country in the world, and so on, and suddenly something's happened. I think it's likely that our nation could invite military conflict and ideological enemies, particularly here about Red China, or concern about them, particularly China features large on the horizon as coming against the United States, particularly our policy towards Taiwan, the Taiwan Relations Act, and the support for Taiwan. This is a tense situation. I think it's completely off the radar screen.
I think most
people don't see this.
I think most Americans have very little idea how bad things are. Chuck, how can people get in touch with you? Do you have a web page?
I do, and in fact, if they'd like a signed copy of my book, they can go to my website at chuckcoppes.com. That's C-O-P-P-E-S. Also, the toll-free number is 1-800-775-6394, and that's 800-775-6394 to get a copy.
Well, Chuck, I almost forgot to get your number and page out, but fortunately we did. So you go right ahead. You got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I hope our listeners hung in there. You know, this is a book that's, again, one of the reasons I wrote it was there's a lot of books that are pointing to our fiscal problems and economic problems, but not putting enough perspective on where this is heading from a Christian point of view. I think that America's in big trouble. We have ideological enemies, as I've said, and I think Red China is building up a huge military naval power, more submarines now than the U.S., I just read yesterday. But the rapture fits somewhere in all of this scenario. And Mark Hitchcock said in his book, Is America in Bible Prophecy? He says, I believe the rapture will produce a power vacuum, and into it will step the Antichrist and his reunited Roman Empire. So we're looking at the European Union today. There's what they call a core of 10 nations or 12 nations right now in the Eurozone, and they call this the core in the German magazine I just read. That will make up the essential economic power of the European Union. And basically the premise of my book is that since World War II, the U.S. has had the privilege of forcing the world to use the dollar for international transactions. And our central bank policy right now is putting us on a fatal course, I believe, for fiscal bankruptcy and hyperinflation. This reckoning day, I see, is going to cause the EU to rise as a superpower. The euro plays prominent in this, replacing the dollar. And all of this fits into what I call a prophetic matrix for the end times. So if readers get my book, they can examine that. I kind of conclude the book with that scenario. Also with some investment advice, consulting, if they'd like to contact me, they can go to my website there. There's a link to my business website as well. And I'd be glad to sign a copy off to people, give them this free reports and things like that. Okay. So I think basically, Dr. Stan, I would just conclude with a message of hope, and that is, you know, we're just seeing a struggle between good and evil in this world. A lot of your listeners should understand this. It's the darkest hours before the dawn.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I believe we're fighting a spiritual battle on a political, ideological, cultural, and on a monetary battlefield. Until people understand that there are strong spiritual forces at work within our financial system as well, it's very difficult to make any sense of what appears to be organized insanity. Chuck, until tomorrow, would you be with us? God bless. And it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Always good to be with you, Dr. Stan. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course the subject of the rapture always comes up, and I don't get into that subject because, quite frankly, I don't know what the answer is. I know that certainly there are many of my good friends who believe in a pre-tribulation rapture. I know many of my good friends believe in a mid-tribulation rapture, and I know some of my friends believe in a post-tribulation rapture. But I will tell you what I think. I think Walter Martin, the Bible Answer Man, put it best, because he was far more of a biblical scholar than I am. And he said, you know, I've spent my whole life studying the Scriptures. I find nothing in the Scriptures that convinces me there's going to be a pre-tribulation rapture, but I pray that I'm wrong. And of course the inference was that he didn't want to be around if things really got bad, but we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. And I think that's really true. This is not an article of faith. I mean, it's an article of dogma, but one day we will know very soon, but we're entering in some very difficult times financially. And I would simply point out to you that everything I see suggests that we're going to be at war with Iran now. I hope it's going to be a very easy war. They claim it's going to be maybe a 3 or 4 or 6 day war, and that's going to be the end of it. I don't believe it. I believe we're opening Pandora's box. I believe that once we attack Iran, the genie's out of the bottle, and there's no way to get the genie back in again. And believe me, that's not a nice genie. So we're going to have to wait and see. We plea to you is understand what's going on. Use the time we have to begin to prepare people for the difficult times that lie ahead. And, of course, certainly I think my talks on the Brotherhood of Darkness, which you can get with the book, the Forbidden Secret, which is either VHS or DVD, and you get for the syllabus, the Iraq, the Untold Story, which is the story of all of the wars of the last century, all of them contrived, every single one of them a lie, including the Second World War, and you've never heard the truth about how American corporations built up Hitler's war machine so we could have a war, so we could bring about a global government, because that's what it's always been around about. But certainly Iraq, the Untold Story, the book, the DVD, I should say the syllabus, and you can get that either with a DVD or the VHS. We have so much information out there. You need to understand there are people who look at the world entirely differently. You need to get information on population control, how they're destroying the minds of our children. And I suggest Dr. Ayoub's excellent DVD and or VHS, Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda, and it comes with a CD-ROM, a free CD-ROM there that would actually give you thousands of pages of documentation and scientific studies. You realize that they know they're destroying the minds of our children, so that today 1 in 6 American children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality, and about 1 in every 90 boys is autistic. Why would you do that intentionally? Why, you hate humanity. And if you understand there really are people who hate humanity, that's why we haven't tried to stop the AIDS epidemic. In fact, that is why AIDS was genetically created. And you say, created? How could that be? Well, you need to read the book written by one of our nation's most eminent scientists, Dr. Garth Nicholson, with over 600 peer-reviewed papers. And you can look him up on the Internet in a second, but you need to read his book, Project Daylily. Project Daylily, of course, the other books on that subject would be emerging viruses, AIDS, Ebola, and the other disease emerging viruses. It's certainly a book that convinced me that this was created in the laboratory. My book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, points out we could have stopped the epidemic at any time, and every barrier was put in the way to keep from stopping it, as it is still being put in the way, as literally hundreds of thousands of people die, millions of people die every year in an unnecessary epidemic. How could that happen? Well, there are people who look at the world differently than you and I. They hold different values. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, our website, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Thank you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, but the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Well, for this hour, we're going to have with us Orlean Kula, and Orlean is the president of the Eagle Forum of the state of California. She heads a property rights group up in the Santa Rosa area. And Orlean has been working so very hard for such a long period of time to try to educate the American people about what's going on here in our country. And this whole idea of that coming in and taking away your property rights under the name of sustainable development, or Agenda 21, the fact that there really are people here who don't believe in our Constitution, who believe that everything should be controlled by a ruling aristocracy, and of course many of them are far leftists. They of course have accepted the slogan think globally, act locally, and they've done what they've been told to do. They've taken control in an organized fashion of city and county governments all across the nation. They've infiltrated the newspapers and magazines and local radio stations to push this idea that justifies this, take away the rights of the people because they think that they're going to be able to bring about this wonderful utopia and that they're going to counter those wicked industrialists and capitalists who are exploiting the masses, because they've adopted this Marxist philosophy that there's a battle between communism and capitalism, and the wicked capitalists want to exploit us common people. And they got it about half right. I mean, there's some very, very wicked capitalists. I happen to believe in the free enterprise system, but I believe capitalism was a product of Karl Marx. He wrote all about it in Das Kapital and convinced everybody that they were the enemy. And yet, of course, they're the very people who have been funding communism since its inception, and even long before, through secret societies. And these local people who are working so very hard are actually doing the work of the very people they oppose. The current Marxist and communist movement here in the United States and throughout the world is largely funded by people of great wealth. And if you have not yet read my March and April newsletter, both of which are posted up on the Internet, my March newsletter is posted, and I believe my April newsletter is posted as well. You need to get them and read them, and wait to see the May newsletter, which we're just finishing. Under many circumstances, Orlean, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Now, certainly, why don't you explain to our listeners how it was that you got involved in this whole issue, and what you've learned as you begin to study and work to try to expose what's going on with sustainable development and Agenda 21 and the effort to take away our property rights.
Well, it was mainly what I saw was going on in our public schools. I'm a substitute teacher, and I took a long leave of absence from the time I first taught back in Idaho Falls, Idaho, when I just had two children, and then now I have six, and so I took a long leave of absence to raise those six children. About 15 years ago, I started substitute teaching and began to see the most amazing, strange things being taught, especially under the title of environmental science. And there was a young girl who wrote an article to the Press Democrat, or a letter to the editor, saying because of what she'd been taught in that environmental science class, she was ashamed of being human and wished that Homo sapiens had never been created. That's what really woke me up to the amazing lies and distortions that was being taught to these kids.
And that's what they're teaching our kids today. Hate yourself, hate humanity, hate your parents, hate everything. You're the cause of the problem. Go ahead, Orlean.
That's very true. And then I began to find out more and more. I attended several conferences and heard some outstanding speakers. I met you and heard you speak and had you come up to speak for some of our Eagle Forum meetings here. And I've read many of the books that you have written. And little by little, I just began to realize how much deeper all of this goes. And just as you have often said, our government needs the best enemies money can buy. So they have these enemies, and they just kind of create them. And the wars have all been created, and there's always a purpose behind them to get us closer and closer to a one-world government. And that's essentially what is going on with the environmental movement as well. They definitely believe in the Communist Manifesto, where the very first plank of it is the abolition of private property. No one is supposed to own private property, and that's what is being taught to our kids in the public schools, that owning property is greedy, and that you're not supposed to own Mother Earth. No one is supposed to own Mother Earth. So it's amazing what's being taught.
Well, I think the people have to understand that they've targeted the minds of our children. And, of course, this whole global warming, a scam is just a scam. I mean, if it, all we have to do is ask people, and I always love to do it, you know, well, you really think there's global warming? And, oh, yes, there sure is. And I say, well, could you explain to me why they call Greenland Greenland? And they look a little blank, and I simply point out that, you know, 1,000 years ago, Greenland was green. And then, of course, it became frozen over as we went into an ice age, and then we began to reverse that ice age in the 1600s, and somewhere in there, and they're in a global warming cycle now over the last several hundred years, and because it's getting warmer up there, of course, why some of the ice is melting in Greenland. But so the Earth has gone through these cycles over and over again. These young people have never heard this, have they, Arlene?
No, because they're not allowed to hear it. It's they use fear tactics to get them to all come along the same mindset as the environmentalists, so that by the time they graduate from high school or go into college, they are 100% green. And then, of course, the policy is enacted even deeper. Once these kids are able to vote, they vote the green agenda, and they truly believe that this is how it is, because they've
hold
never
that thought been. Right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Arlene was simply commenting that they indoctrinate these children in school in these radical leftist ideas, and then, of course, they start voting where they vote the straight Marxist line, because they really believe this. This is the reality. Our educational system is not education. It's indoctrination. You've heard that old adage. Oh, my goodness, if you're not a liberal when you're 18, why, you have no heart. If you're still a liberal when you're 40, you have no head. It has nothing to do with hearts and heads. It has to do with the educational system that is lying to our students and, of course, depriving them of the opportunity to learn how to think. And certainly the great tragedy of today is we're not telling our children the truth. We're damaging their minds with mercury and fluoride and aspartame and aluminum and so many other things, known poisons that we know will affect their ability to cerebrate. But on the other hand, at least as far as their ability to think and reason, they can overcome this. And you see these kids who at 18, you know, were dedicated leftists, like myself, who can actually come around and begin to realize that they've been lied to. So some of them are a lot smarter than I was. By the time they're 22 or 24, they've realized because they've been lied to, or maybe they were fortunate enough not to go all the way through school, and then, of course, their ideas have never been indoctrinated them with the wrong ideas. I find many times the people who've been to college are the ones who know the least about what the world's really about. But by the time they're 40, they can begin to think, and they realize that the real world has been withheld from them. So don't you find that, Arlene, that a lot of times young people, even though they've been thoroughly indoctrinated, can eventually learn?
Yes, that's true. But the sad thing is they're not being taught true American history anymore, and so they don't recognize evil because it's not being taught to them anymore. And, you know, the old saying, if you do not learn from history, then you're bound to repeat it. And that's what I'm so afraid is going to happen to our nation. Phyllis Schlafly, in one of her latest education reporters, cited some of the statistics that the seniors graduating from universities, and these are top universities across our nation, barely score like maybe 1% more on tests dealing with American history than the incoming freshmen. And it's just appalling how few of our college students even have American history or even understand civics. And so if you don't really value your own history of your country, then you're certainly not going to do your utmost to preserve that history or the traditions that your nation has. And that's what I find really sad and very appalling.
But, you know, it's amazing. If you have an opportunity to talk to these people and tell them the truth, how many times they can pick it up. And I know you've told some stories. I've heard you tell stories how you have been able, even as a substitute teacher, to change the children's entire perspective just by talking them to an hour or two. And I found the same thing at the University of California in Santa Cruz, where I live. But they don't invite me up there anymore, because in an hour I can undo a whole semester of indoctrination. If you tell the young people the truth, they'll recognize it. If they never hear the truth, they'll never know it.
That's true. One of the exciting things that I do every year about this time, I go and I'm a counselor at this Constitution camp that's in California. It's up above the High Sierras at a beautiful lake called Huntington Lake. And for 5 hours every day, the kids get to have instruction about our founding fathers and the true American history. And it's just amazing what they learn in 1 week's time. They take an entrance exam Sunday evening, and then they take an exit exam Friday morning about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And it's really exciting to see what they've learned in 1 week's time. And many of them say, this is a better experience than I've had than a whole year of college.
Well, I think, of course, the thing is, there's nothing complicated about these concepts of freedom. I mean, down through the ages, it's always been government that has taken freedom from people, and that's why our founding fathers wanted to limit the power, at least of the federal government, so men could be free. For they certainly were well acquainted with John Locke's dictum that government governs best, that governs the least, and his ideas of the rights of life, liberty, and property. And it was these ideas of life, liberty, and property that were carried forward into our Declaration of Independence. The only thing was that although Jefferson included the word property in the Declaration, the committee changed it to pursuit of happiness. But, of course, every place in the Constitution, they mentioned life and liberty. They do mention the word property, going back to those Lockean concepts. And if you take away property rights, you take away human rights. And if you can't keep your own property, then you have no freedom. You should be able to keep the product of what you've earned. And that's not the way it is in a socialist society. They either take it away from you by force or by taxation. And, of course, the whole idea is, why should you have so much when so many people have so little? And the people who are saying that usually are the wealthiest of all. And, of course, they want to redistribute your wealth, not their wealth. That's the Al Gores of this world. That's the Bill Clintons of this world. That's the Rockefellers of this world, and the Fords and the Carnegies and the Bill Gates and the Warren Buffetts. They want to redistribute your wealth, and they're all dedicated to this concept of wealth redistribution. Your wealth, not theirs. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to talk to Arlene. Well, certainly, Arlene, let's get into this whole idea of property rights, because I understand that up there in Santa Rosa where you're working, why there's a conscious effort through Agenda 21 and some of these other crazy environmental regulations to begin to take away the people's property adjacent to the creeks and springs and waterways and any real excuse they can have to take away property rights from the people so they can't use their own property. All they can do is is pay taxes on.
Yes, that's very true. We are facing this ourselves. We have 8 acres in Rincon Valley, just outside of Santa Rosa, and we have a creek that runs through it. They are coming up with a general plan 2020, and part of that plan is that anyone that has a creek or a river, the creeks will have to have a 100-foot setback on either side, and the river is 200 feet, supposedly because people don't know how to take care of their own creek beds, and the sides are deteriorating. So this is turning it into a riparian corridor that essentially you still own, you have to pay taxes on, but you can't do anything with that property.
Well, is the local environmentalist going to come in then and take care of the creek bed for you?
That's supposedly what they're pretending, but you know and I know that when the government takes over anything, it's certainly not better taken care of than the private property owner himself. But what it's essentially doing is turning it into kind of a public corridor, and maybe they'll establish bike trails along it. Who knows what they'll do? But I understand in Santa Cruz, where this has already happened, there's a lot of high crime because of the public having access to these creek beds, and a lot of refuse and terrible stuff being thrown into the creeks, and certainly not in better condition than if the private property person could take care of it himself.
And it was really rather interesting that over in the Pajaro Valley, not too far from where I live, they had a river that ran through town. And, of course, when you have the river there, you got to keep clearing it out, because if you don't, why, when the waters come and the floods come, why, then the water's going to back up and flood the community. So the people, you know, they're beginning to, of course, there's all sorts of trash in the river, there's all sorts of logs in the river, there's all sorts of brush in the river, and the people say, we've got to go in and clean this out. Oh, no, you can't do that. We've got to let it go back to nature. That's the way God made it. That's the way he wants it. You can't clean the brush out. You can't get the logs out of the river. Why, of course, this is protected, you know. And they used all the excuses why this couldn't be done. And then came the great flood. And, of course, the water couldn't get by the brush, and the logs backed up and dammed up the river, and it flooded the whole valley and did, yeah, I think, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of damage. And the people sued the state. They actually were able to collect on it, and that just seems to sort of impoverish the people, you know, because all across the state have to pay for the trouble the environmentalists made. The environmentalists have blocked the development of our nuclear power here. Every other country is doing it, but we can't have nuclear power in America. My goodness, what would we do with the spent fuel, they say? And it's all a lie, of course. You simply process it, but they never discuss that. And they blocked the development of our energy resources. They blocked the building of gasoline refineries, which is why the price of gasoline is so high. But you see, they love that, because when they get the price of gasoline high enough, then people won't use their cars. And they want to get us out of our cars. They want to get us onto bicycles. And you see, that's crazy talk. But these are people who look at the world differently. Do they have that whole idea of putting the bicycle trails up there so we can get people out of their cars and then have them go to the market on their little bicycles?
That's right. And you see these sustainable communities popping up all over, where on the lower level will be shops, on the second level housing, but really crowded together, and there's no place for cars to park. There's obviously, the cars are not in the plan at all. But it's, I'm sure you've seen them. I see them all over our nation now, these little sustainable communities. And, of course, they're built around a shopping center, and they would like to have some rail system close by. So if people do need to travel, they can go with the rails rather than the cars.
But what happens if you don't have any trains for them to get on? You may have the rails there, but what happens if there's nothing running on the rails?
That's right. Then you definitely will be better controlled. That's what this is all about, is just keeping people in small little areas where they can better control you.
And I think this is what so many of the liberals were involved in, understand. It's all about control, controlling them too.
That's true.
Well, you're right ahead.
Well, Part of the research that I've been doing, I think I mentioned this to you, I think all of this is leading us closer and closer to losing the sovereignty of our nation, not only our own private sovereignty of our own land, but this movement towards the North American Union is one of the things I am most concerned about, and I've had to do a lot of speaking on this subject and a lot of research. So I've come up with a little booklet. I call it The Timeline Leading to a North American Union and the Parallel to the Formation of the European Union. My husband is from Germany, and his first degree was at Harvard and Tufts University in international law and diplomacy, which got him a job with the German government, and that's where we lived when we were first married, and our two children were there, and he was very involved in this whole concept of the European Union. They thought it was a wonderful thing back then. Of course, now he knows differently, and so does his father and most of the Germans and all of his relatives. They think it's been an absolute disaster for Germany, and most of the countries that belong to it are beginning to feel that way. It's caused a huge rise in the cost of living, and they've lost more and more of their freedoms. And so I thought it would be really important for people to understand how the parallel was to creating this European Union compared to this movement towards a North American Union. The same secrecy, the same stealth. They wouldn't let people really know what was going on. This was just a free trade agreement called the Common Market, and they were just supposed to be in better shape to compete with big countries like the United States or other places by having this common market. And when people would talk about, you know, we're worried that you're trying to form some kind of a union here, that, oh, that's so silly, and then scoff at them and call them ridiculous, just like they're saying that about people who talk about a North American Union. But little by little, that's exactly what happened, and people didn't even realize it, and suddenly it was upon them. And I think that's what's going to happen with this North American Union. The goal is to have it in place by the year 2010, and my understanding is they are well on their way. There's just doesn't seem to be anything keeping them back, except for a few states are beginning to wake up about it, as well as there is a resolution in Congress. So some of our congressmen have signed on to it and are talking about it, but the vast majority of them pretend it doesn't exist and won't talk about it.
Well, if for anybody really has any doubts at all, we actually have a video of a talk that was given by the most powerful man in the United States, and certainly one of the most powerful men in the world. His name is David Rockefeller. It was given back about 2001, 2002. It's called American Union 2005. And it was the plan for the unification of North America, Mexico, United States, Canada, back then. And the plan was we were going to have it in place by 2005. Well, fortunately, it didn't work. But that doesn't matter. Now it's the American Union by 2010. They're not just waited when things don't go well, but you can actually get that video if you like more information. You can always give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. It's American Union 2010. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Orlin Kula. We're talking about the American A union, North American Union, and there is a plan to destroy the sovereignty of our country, to merge the United States with Mexico and Canada. When the administration tells you that it isn't true, they're simply lying, just exactly as they lied to the people in Europe, a couple of decades ago, and say, we're not moving towards a European Union. We're not going to do anything about sovereignty. We're not going to take away your sovereignty. And they demonized, they attacked and vilified anybody who tried to tell the truth, just exactly as Michael Medved and other shills for the establishment are doing on their radio programs today, belittling and attacking and demonizing anybody who dares to try to get out the truth about what's going on. And fortunately, we have a few people who are telling the truth, like Lou Dobbs, but even they don't really understand the spiritual implications of what's going on, but Lou Dobbs is doing a great job. And certainly we have a video. It's David Rockefeller talking several years ago about the American Union, and the title was American Union 2005, and there he was saying, by 2005, we're going to have an American Union. Well, fortunately, they got their timetable off, and now they put it off to 2010. But when they say that we don't want an American Union, are they simply lying? But then, of course, you have to understand that the stakes are tremendous, because these men are going to transform the world. Isn't that a wonderful and worthwhile purpose? What's wrong with lying if you don't believe in absolutes, you don't believe in right and wrong, you want to be in a position of power, and you think you are so much smarter than everybody else? So there really is a program, as Arlene has said, and it's certainly being implemented very efficiently, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I'm glad you mentioned David Rockefeller. In my preface to this little booklet, I quote from his booklet that he has, I think it was just published a few years ago, called Memoirs, and he actually says here, "Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I'm proud of it."
I am a proud internationalist. Yes, that comes from Memoirs. We do actually carry the book. We want people to be able to get their hands on it, to read it, to hold their hands, and understand that this is exactly what's planned. Probably one of the most powerful men in the world, David Rockefeller, longtime vice president of the Council on Foreign Relations, longtime chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, I think 15 years, and now the honorary chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, founder of the Trilateral Commission, member of the Bilderbergers, certainly a man with fabulous wealth, and his family has been involved with this whole occult movement literally for generations to bring about the New World Order, the New World Religion, and the New World Leader.
That's very true. And what is so amazing is how blatant they are about it now. I guess they think it is a done deal. They used to try to hide it. At first, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers were top secret. But now, at least the CFR and the Trilateral have their own websites. I think the Bilderbergers doesn't have a website. But it's amazing how they are out in the open about it now, because they think there's no stopping them. And they're very, like you said, he's very proud of the fact that he's part of this movement to form a one-world government.
A secret cabal, I think, was his term, working against the best interests of the United States to form this new international economic order. And if that is the charge, I stand guilty. I'm a proud internationalist, said David Rockefeller in his memoirs a couple of years ago. And if you'd like to read it, it's available from Radio Liberty. And you'll also find out his daughter is such a good friend of that great Cuban patriot Fidel Castro. Why would the daughter of David Rockefeller, the most powerful capitalist in America, be such a good friend of Fidel Castro? Well, maybe most of what we think we know about communism and capitalism just isn't true. And if you doubt that, of course, you need to read my April 2007 newsletter. It's up on the internet, or the March and April 2007 newsletters. It's important you realize that most of what you think you know is not so. There's a conscious effort to confuse the American people, to make you believe that communism is the enemy, and yet has been financed by people in this country since its inception. We're pouring hundreds of millions of dollars in to build up the Soviet Union, even at this very day. And the fact that nobody's telling her that is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Jack calling in from Michigan. We'll see. We'll open up the lines in a few moments for calls. But as long as you got Jack. Hi, Jack. How you doing?
Oh, hi, Dr. Stan. Great program. I presume your guest is connected with Eagle Forum, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. In studying the Constitution with the assistance of three different Christian believer independent law research study groups over the past several years, I've come to understand quite well and intimately how this corporate system of government has successfully usurped our private property rights, although in an invalid, it's known as legalized fraud. Article 5 of their charter says that private property shall not be taken for public use without just compensation. And then...
You mean Article 5 of the Bill of Rights?
Correct.
No, he's right.
Yes.
That's the Fifth Amendment. He's
Fifth Amendment, right. Thank
yes.
you. And then in Article 13, speaking of slavery, it does say it shall not exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Then in the 14th Amendment, the Citizenship Amendment, it says all persons born, naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof.
Of course, these were means of extending the power of the centralized government, and of course, they were only initially supposed to deal with slavery. This has been altered. They've changed this meaning because of those who had established a dictatorship. And thank you so much, Jack. And of course, the first 10 amendments were aimed at limiting the power of government. And then, of course, after that, each subsequent amendment was aimed at increasing the power of government, which was the last thing our founders wanted, because they realized that men could not be trusted with power. If men had power, they would misuse it. And the whole idea and the secret of America was to take the chains off the people, put the chains on the government. But there have always been those, of course, who had a different agenda, and that was to take the chains off the government and put them on the people. And I very much fear that that's exactly what's happening today. And we've lost sight of what the 13th and 14th Amendments were all about. But then the war, the Civil War, was really fought to increase government power, not free the slaves. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have anything you'd like to talk to Orlean about. Otherwise, we're going to get ahead and talk about these ideas of sustainable development, private property rights, and the North American Union. So you go right ahead, Orlean.
I would like to comment on this caller, Jack. Was that his name?
Jack from Michigan, right.
I agree with you. The entire Bill of Rights was presented to limit government, saying, and you cannot do this either, and you can't do that either. I had a speaker in our home ask the question, how many rights does the First Amendment grant us? And so people were counting them up, and the answer was none. Our rights are granted to us by God. They're not granted to us by the Bill of Rights. But the Bill of Rights, the whole purpose was to limit what government could do, and they could not infringe on our God-given rights.
And I really think that is such a vitally important concept. People have forgotten that the Constitution was simply set up to guarantee the rights that were laid out in the Declaration of Independence.
That's right.
And when, of course, you read the Constitution, they date it from writing of the, as you read the very end of the Constitution, they refer back to the Declaration of Independence. And the whole idea of the Declaration was that our rights came from God. We hold these truths to be so. Boy, are we a long way from there.
That's so true. Our kids are not being taught any of this in the public schools. In fact, they're now being taught that the Bill of Rights is kind of old-fashioned, kind of negative, because it's talking about what people, what the government cannot do. And the kids are being taught a much better form of rights as the Declaration on Human Rights from the United Nations. It's just amazing. I see this in most of the classes I go to that have anything to do with American history.
Isn't it a shame that they're not telling our children the truth? Well, let's go to Will, who's calling. Is this Will calling from Missouri?
It certainly is, hey. Dr. Stan.
How are you doing, Will?
I'm doing great. Orlean, I wanted to ask you a question in regards to your property rights groups and also in regards to the problem that you're having along the streams. Have you taken the time now to look into the FEMA hazard mitigation planning system?
I think you were the one that informed us about that way back when.
Exactly, and I was just wondering whether you'd been able to make the connection yet between what your problem is on the ground versus how it is laid out by FEMA in that hazard mitigation system. You've got basically the drive is to lock up land along waterways in perpetuity, and the way they're doing that basically is by putting up a 25-75% grant to buy that property, and when they can't buy it, then they'll just either regulate you through the international building codes or condemn the property for blight and other reasons, or scenic views or watershed protections. And what is really the most important part about this is not only is it is by consent, as Dr. Stan was just saying, passed by local ordinances, they hire the code enforcement officer, and then the whole process starts to go from there into what is known as prescriptive rights, where as long as the people don't object, they develop, it's kind of like, But the easiest way of getting rid of them, the hazard mitigation system, is if California, or as in Missouri, we passed a rider where you can just simply take it to the ballot and ask the people, shall we continue with hazard mitigation planning? It's a yes-no up vote. And if you have a good coalition of voters in your area that don't want this any longer in your county, as they did in Dent County here in Missouri, Wanda Benton led that effort, but you can actually say no to hazard mitigation planning on the ballot and be done with it.
That's a great idea, Will. Did it work pretty well in your area?
Yes, it has.
Well, have you thought so about that, Orlean?
How did you do this? Was it an initiative where you had people sign a petition to get it on the ballot? Or
at this point, the county that has gotten rid of it, they didn't even have to go to that point. What they did was basically just get all of their ducks in order. They had a very strong woman who was leading the effort, and her husband, Wanda and Bill Benton. I went over there to their county and spoke and laid it all out for them, brought all the books along. But they basically did the work themselves, and by presenting it to their county commission, the county commission saw the downside of getting involved with FEMA, and they simply said no.
Well, of course, you could have done this certainly by getting on the ballot, couldn't you?
And you certainly can in Missouri.
That's what you can hold over the head of the county commissioners.
Yes, you can go right straight to the ballot in Missouri, and perhaps in California as well, and other states, and you can just simply ask the question on the ballot, shall hazard mitigation planning continue? Yes or no, up or down?
And you mentioned that there are some books that we can read about this?
Absolutely. The very first place to go is to the International Code Council's website.
Could I suggest maybe it might be a lot easier, Will? If you leave your number here, right, we could be sure it gets to Orlean, and she would be able to get the information, and maybe your telephone number, get in touch with you.
Sure.
Again, rather than, because it's important to know how to do it, but a lot of our listeners out there probably are not going to be getting into that. Now, will this cover certainly many of these other things? There are all sorts of other guises, you know, under the environmental. We got to protect, a lot of this has to do with environmentalism.
Well,
does FEMA certainly trump the environmentalism?
What FEMA has the ability to do, basically, is to provide grant monies to buy the land that they want. And so they can come in to an area through the regional councils of government and excite or entice a community or a county into entering into the hazard mitigation planning program. And once they've done that, then they are laid out. Their work then is lock, stock, and barrel. It's a stepping stone process. The way that it has come in down here, it starts with something like Enhanced 911. Then from Enhanced 911, it goes to the flood hazard mitigation, the emergency operations planning, and from there it goes to NIMS, which is the National Incident Management System. And that whole setup is really just exactly that. It's a setup. It allows the federal government to have control over local governments. And yes, there are lots of ways that they get involved in it, but there's many tools in the toolbox. If you'll go on the internet, anyone that's listening, and type in hazard mitigation, you can go to your Department of Agriculture, you can go to your conservation department, you can go to the Soil and Water District. Any place you type in hazard mitigation planning, you'll find hits right there. And if you follow that out, you'll see that they're all involved, they're all in bed, and they're all going to the same direction, which is basically the implementation of Chapter 7 and Chapter 28, I believe, okay, of Agenda 21.
Okay, fine. Well, thanks very much, Will.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
All right. That's Will, of course, calling from Michigan, Missouri, and he's certainly been very much of an activist and certainly been working very hard there in Missouri. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. This is vitally important. You must understand, freedom is under attack today from people of great wealth and power. And this whole thing is coordinated. It really began with the Club of Rome back in 1972. And, of course, with a book that came out at that time that was talking certainly about the fact we were running out of water, running out of air, running out of natural resources, and the book was called The Limits of Change or something of the sort. Limits of Growth, I think it was. Anyway, of course, it was that very year they had their first Earth Summit, and then 20 years later they had the second one in 1992, and by this time they had Al Gore on board, John Kerry, then Prince Charles of England. In fact, he really leads this whole thing, and the many of the most wealthy and powerful capitalists and corporate leaders and bankers who saw in this scam an excellent vehicle to expand their control over the lives of the people, because who could be against the environment and protecting future generations and having sustainable development? I mean, it sounds really good, and so many good people I got began to get on board without ever realizing this was a power grab. And there's no problem facing the environment today that a new set of regulations that increases the power of these very powerful and wealthy men won't solve, or at least, actually, it'll make it worse. But at least when people first hear it, sounds like such a great idea. Have you run into that, Orlene?
Oh, yes, that's very true. And they have such amazing deceptive ways, just like using FEMA. FEMA sounds like they're coming in to help set up the city, get it ready for whatever emergency. We have a lot of flooding during the winter time sometimes by the Russian River. So FEMA will come in and help you set up a hazard mitigation plan. And then just like, was it Will? Was that his name? Anyway, the caller from Missouri, they'll, once you bring them in, it's like letting the camel's head in the tent, and all the regulations follow. And it's just amazing, all of these government organizations, and it's like an octopus with eight legs, all of them.
I think it's more like tentacles, you know.
It'll crush
the life out of you. Well, let's go quickly to Jack. Jack, did you want to complete your idea there?
Yeah, Dr. Stan, the point I was trying to make, speaking of the monolithic corporation and deception, people are coerced into recording their private land deed, and there's statutory code sites, there's significant case law that proves that government is not to record, is not to accept the recordings of one's private property because they don't exist for that purpose. And when they do, they're supposed to reveal the fact. Under corporate trust law, they have the legally binding principles known as full disclosure, good faith, valuable consideration, clean hands, so that if there is an agreement, a valid commercial nexus agreement, whereby one does surrender, forfeit, transfer their legal rights and interests in their private land, that they be compensated, as the Fifth Amendment says, just compensation.
But, of course, Jack, the thing is, for the practical purposes, if you're in a community and the laws say that you will register this with the local community and with the local department, whatever it is, the land agency, you better do it or you're not going to be able to either buy or sell your property. So there are a lot of these things out there that, of course, you can argue them and argue them and argue them, and this gets into the sovereignty movement. And I always like to say to the people in the sovereignty movement, you're going to be the best informed person in the concentration camp, but, of course, as far as saving our freedom, you're spending all your time arguing about moot points, instead of getting down to the nitty-gritty where the rubber meets the road, and that is there's an organized effort to take away our freedom. And this is where we're going to be able to do the most good, is by educating people about who's behind this and then the spiritual forces which are energizing them.
Well, also, Jack, what I've been told by Fred Grant, he's the attorney for Stewards of the Range, he was really helpful when we were first organizing our property rights group here. He told me he understands constitutional law really well. That was what his specialty was. But he said, essentially, our federal government is no longer honoring our Constitution, especially the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment concerning property rights. And state governments are not really honoring their own state constitutions dealing with the same issues. What we have to do is fight it on a local level and just do your utmost to get your board of supervisors to realize if they don't protect your rights, they're not going to be reelected. And he has all sorts of other successful plans that he's implemented in other counties to help them protect their rights on the local level. But it's very sad. I truly don't believe that our founding, or that our present-day congressmen or our elected presidents even know what the Constitution is anymore. It's very tragic. Our founding fathers, I'm sure, are rolling over in their graves all the time watching what's going on here.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that what they've done, of course, you ordinarily have a place in the county where you register your property. And they've totally altered the meaning of so much of this. They do what's expedient. They do what gives them the power. What we need, of course, to get back to the fundamentals of this country, where property rights, you know, were ours in perpetuity, and we could give up those rights. But, of course, what they've done is step by step gradually erode those rights because they do not believe in private property. They want everything to be subject to the state. They want to be able to come in and take your property for one means or another. Oh, my goodness, why, there's a moth on it. My goodness, there's a fern that's an endangered fern. And so many people are so gullible, and when they say, we're a nation of laws, are you going to be a lawbreaker? You're going to step on that fern? You're going to run over that rodent and... And they put people in prison for stepping on ferns, for running over rodents. And, of course, the best thing to do is you find an endangered species on your land is bury it quickly before they take away your property rights. We'll be right back in just a moment with Orlean. Orlean, why don't you go ahead and finish up this story?
Well, now that you've mentioned the endangered species part, we were also told by the Planning Commission that was putting through this Agenda 2020 that, well, it's called General GP 2020, but it isn't an agenda. But anyway, that we all had endangered species or endangered plants on our properties. They'd drawn little circles on all of the maps across the county. And people would ask them about it and say, did you actually come on my property and see these endangered species? And they said, oh, no, no one's been on your property. We just suspect that that is possible endangered habitat for these species. And so it's like you are now guilty until proven innocent. You would have to hire an expensive government-certified biologist to come on your property and say, oh, no, there are no species here, but there's in Sebastopol, a town close to Santa Rosa, there was an incident where one of these certified biologists actually brought an endangered plant and planted it in the middle of the night. Someone caught him doing it. So they have an agenda, of course. And once you have an endangered species on your property, like you mentioned, it's like you've lost your property rights.
What do they do to this fellow who is actually there planting an endangered species?
I think he had some kind of a fine. I'm not sure.
I mean, we know, for instance, we have actually videos of people from Fish and Wildlife clubbing salmon, killing the salmon so they could say there's a shortage of salmon. What madness is this? Well, if there's a shortage of salmon, then we've got to tear out the dams and we can't let you fish and we can't give you access to the creeks. They create the problems, ladies and gentlemen. We're dealing with people who have a whole different agenda. Because they worship a different God. Go ahead.
Yes, that's very true. I was on a biology field trip with my son in high school, and we went to one of the places up the river where it was a fish hatchery, and you would watch these biologists. First of all, they kind of do something to the fish, so they're kind of half asleep or I don't know quite what they've done to them, but then they take them and force them to have their eggs come out, and then they supposedly are helping the salmon to survive, but an elderly biologist there who was a tour guide was helping us through. I asked him, does this really help? Is this actually causing more salmon to be produced? And he said, no, but I go on doing it anyway.
Okay, good night. We're out of time. Bye-bye. God bless.
Thank you. God bless you, too. Bye-bye. Thanks for having me on.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, that was Arlene Fuller. And certainly, Arlene's always a delight to have on, and we need to keep reminding you that there really are people out there who want to use the threat to the environment to take away your rights as an individual. Actually, we have, of course, a 4-tape set on sustainable development. We have several 4-tape sets on global warming. We have a syllabus on sustainable development. We have a talk, a VHS on sustainable development. We actually carry a VHS by Michael Shaw on sustainable development. All of this information is available through Radio Liberty, or you can go to Michael Shaw's website at freedomadvocates.org or .com and get his material. It's excellent. We recommend it as well. It's important, ladies and gentlemen, that you understand this whole thing is a scam. It is a scam by people of great wealth who want to control you. They're really not interested in the environment. They're interested in control. If you believe in peak oil, we hope that you go to my website and pull down my articles on peak oil and read them. It's a scam. What's it all about? Why, basically, it's about getting you out of your car. It's about lowering your living standards. And, of course, then you get my articles on electricity. And, of course, what they want to do is drive up the price of electricity. They want, of course, to force you to alter your lifestyle, to use electricity and to conserve. Because, don't you know, we're running out of electricity? No, we're not running out of electricity. It can be produced so cheaply, but they don't want to produce cheaply. They want to create shortages. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on really makes sense. We actually have a syllabus on the electricity crisis. We have video and poor tape sets on the electricity crisis and how they were here in California. We're able to double and triple the price of electricity by convincing the people that if we could only deregulate electricity, we could bring the price down. Oh, they said the price of electricity is higher in California than the adjacent states. We'll bring it down by deregulating electricity, knowing full well that that way they could drive the price up through the roof. But they never told the American people. After all, if you told them the truth, that you were really going to increase the price so they wouldn't be able to have electric heat, they wouldn't be able to have electric air conditioning, so we'd have to begin to deindustrialize America, so major corporations would move overseas that needed electricity, but the American people wouldn't go along with it. But the elite think they know what's better for us, and so they're the ones, of course, who've laid out the program. I remember my four-tape set, talk, and syllabus on electricity is available by calling 1-800-544-8927, Sustainable Development. And then, of course, the real crux of it all is there are too many people in the world. If you don't believe that, you need to get National Security Study Memorandum 200 from off the Internet, or we do have it available through Radio Liberty. If you don't believe that they plan to make new diseases to kill off millions of people as a means of mass murder, you need to read Dr. MacArthur's testimony before the House Appropriations Committee back in 1969. We have that. You need to get the Global Population Agenda monograph. You need to get my talk, Planned Population Reduction. None dare call it genocide, and population control, those three talks. And one of the best things we have was done by Dr. David Ayo. It's called Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda by Dr. David Ayo, and with that comes the CD-ROM, with literally thousands of pages of government documents telling how they know that the mercury is destroying the minds of our youth, and that's just what they want. They know what they're doing. The last thing, of course, they want is for the parents of the autistic children, or, of course, the surviving spouse of somebody who's died of Alzheimer's, to realize that those diseases are totally unnecessary. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.